continue studying through the Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount is going to last through chapter 5, chapter 6, and chapter 7. So we're going to be on this particular sermon of Jesus's for a while. We begin in verse 32. Jesus says, "It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery." This passage, I told you last week, I was glad to get past that particular passage, and then here's another one that's a tough one. Let me just start out by saying this, that we have many people in our church. I have many people in my family that have had divorces, okay, have gone through divorces. And if God had not redeemed me 2 years into my marriage, certainly I would have, without question, would have been through probably multiple divorces. Certainly my wife had grounds for divorcing me. But God's gracious, and He forgives, and He, in all of our lives, He takes us past those times. And so this is not a lesson to try to bring a guilt trip. It's not a lesson to try to browbeat anybody, as much as it's just an attempt to bring biblical instruction. And the subject of divorce, to try to see it the way God sees it. And we can't skip around the Bible and just pick topics that we like and then skip over the topics that aren't enjoyable. So we have to see the whole counsel of God's Word. So let me approach it like this. First of all, I'd like to talk about some of the negatives that result from divorce in a practical sense. First of all, divorce fragments families. Whether the divorce is warranted or justified by God or not, if children are part of the equation, the results are the same. The children will then be divided between two households. In many circumstances, as you well know, the grandparents are potentially involved with care and custody, so it's potential for the children to be divided through multiple households, four perhaps, including both sets of grandparents. And so that's certainly not saying that it's not doable. It's not saying that the situation is beyond help. It certainly, by God's grace, but many parents get it done, and many children go through it and do fine, but it's not ideal. Okay, it's not the way that we would like for it to be, or God would plan for it to be. Okay, the children will have divided households as a result of divorce. Secondly, divorce usually ends up with blended families, potentially creating multiple blends. You have, say, one couple divorces; they have children. The man, he goes and he remarries. And the person that he remarries has children, and then perhaps they have children together, and so that's his, hers, and theirs. And then if his spouse that he just divorced went and did the same thing, you have potentially six different blends of children and or parents amongst this situation. Now you say, well, big deal. Is that doable? Absolutely, it's doable, and many people do and are not finding fault there, but is it ideal? No, it's not the way God would have planted that, because each of those, and if there's multiple divorces, the blends could go on and on and on. And so with each of those combinations comes many complex issues, potential problems. And anybody that, many of our families do have blended families. And I came from multiple combinations. But with that comes issues that might not otherwise be there had the divorce not taken place. Potential problems. Just last night, ironically, Trish and I prayed for a couple that not out of this church that we know that are in the middle of turmoil in their marital relationship over this very issue right here. And their children are grown. They're not even in the house with them. But it's these complex issues of even your grown children creating complex situations between two spouses. And so the blended family dynamics is an issue that has to be looked at. Thirdly, divorce most often creates huge financial strain. You have one parent, one spouse, trying to live and function as a single parent, perhaps. You have the other one working night and day to try to pay alimony or child, what do they call it, support. you want to support them. and this sort of thing. And of course, there's so many when you start talking about the financial, there's so many things that could be considered. But let me just make it simple math. One divorce equals or creates two mortgages or two rent payments. One divorce creates two water bills, two electric bills, two gas bills, two insurance plans, two phone plans. You see, it just makes sense that and then you take on top of that the increased resources to transport the kids between parents, and the time is valuable. You know, perhaps they live hours apart, and every Friday evening they have to meet partway. You know, and these sort of things. And again, it just it creates great financial strain. Number four, divorce contributes to emotional distress in children. The inaccessibility of one parent or the other, either emotionally or physically, can have a major influence on the child's emotions and their development. Not being able to walk in the other room and have into the arms of your dad or the arms of your mother, perhaps, or whoever is not in the house at that time, those things make a difference in a kid's life. And though it seems trivial, it's really, really not trivial at all. It's just really quite profound how those sort of things shape a child in the sense of security in life. Is it doable? Yes. And God builds in, thank God, He builds into children a resilience that even we adults don't have. He gives these kids some stuff that we just don't have to get through these difficult times. And kids can face more than we realize, but it's not ideal. It's not the way we would want it. Oftentimes, divorced families move frequently. Relocate. And with each one of those relocations, a youngster has to go to a new school, has a new neighborhood, has new routines, has new friends, and that's a lot of stress as well on a kid. Before I was taken to my grandparents as a youngster, where that finally gave me the stability. But before that, I went to six different schools in six different towns, and that was just my early grade school years. And I know people that have more than that throughout life, and I remember what that was like, the difficulties in adjusting, and that's why I'm so stinking messed up right now, you know. No, I have it good. I'm not complaining. I'm not whining, but it's a fact of the matter. We just moved all over, just here and there and yawn, but thank God for grandparents. And so, number five, the detriment that divorce causes on the spouses, the husband and the wife, has to be considered. Oftentimes anger, resentment, hatred, jealousy, these can be the result of a broken marriage. Feelings of abandonment, feelings many times that emotions that many times people never get over, never get past. And not getting past that just adds to their future relationships and or deducts from them. It hinders their ability to relate to others. And then the kids, they pick up on this and they hear this, or they hear the fusses between mom and dad on the phone, or the criticism of mom towards dad, or vice versa, and that stresses the children more. And then oftentimes a divorce person will try to rebound too quickly and jump off into another relationship that would not be the best for them. And then the same scenario repeats itself. And so, again, not trying to just be so bleak here, but we have to consider these things as we study this subject. And the most important thing, we see the ugly of divorce. I think we've driven that point home tonight. But the most important thing is that we see that in God's eyes, that's not His plan, okay? In fact, there's a lot of situations where people walk out on their spouse when it's not permissible. It's not due to unfaithfulness or due to adultery. And the fact is, we got to say it like it is, that's sin in God's eyes, okay? And so Jesus says there in this verse 32, He says, saving for the cause of fornication. And what's He saying there? He's saying that it is permissible. It is allowable by God for a spouse to divorce an unfaithful spouse. Now, that is not saying that it's a mandate, and it's certainly not even saying that God is encouraging that. I think it would behoove every family to try to stay intact, to try to work past the sin of the other person and to hold the family together and work the marriage out and this sort of thing. I think it would be in the best interest of everybody. But He makes it clear that a person is permitted to divorce an unfaithful spouse if they choose. So what is the point that Jesus is trying to drive home in these two verses? And I'll wind this up and hopefully simplify it a little bit. Remember that Jesus, in these chapters, in the early part of this chapter, in these prior verses, he's been addressing the self-righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. And the no-fault divorce policies that we see today are nothing new, because in fact, that was the approach to marriage and divorce that even the religious Jews had taken, they had adopted. If they found that they were unhappy, maybe found some sort of distasteful something about their spouse, or they just decided they wanted to be single, that they could just, according to their tradition and their beliefs, they could just go divorce that person on demand. And because they were divorced, then if they remarried somebody else or whatever, that would not be considered adultery. And so they would think that they could do this and not have violated any commands of God. But Jesus is pointing out to them that lowering God's standard and creating their own standard is just leading not just themselves, but the person that they marry in the second marriage, or those that the person they left marries or whatever, into adultery. And in the previous verses, if you'll remember, where he was talking about lust this last week that we studied, Jesus told them if they even looked on a woman to lust in their heart, that they were committing adultery. So in the case of marriage and divorce, he's saying the same thing. You're committing adultery just by having this belief that you can just go divorce every time you want and then change spouses. He's telling them that's that again. Your self-righteousness tells you it's okay because you've been divorced, you've legally parted from that person, but in your heart and in reality, that's just your self-righteousness talking. You've really violated a commandment of God. And he says there in verse 32 that when that's done, causeth, if they divorce their wife, that he causeth her to committeth adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committing adultery. And so by a man walking out on his wife just arbitrarily would be creating a situation where there's multiple adulteries. And so it's to them and their tradition, they saw none of this as adultery. They just saw it as, hey, we're not doing anything wrong. We're getting this legally taken care of, and we're walking away from our spouse. And Jesus is saying it's not that simple. They were self-righteous. They considered themselves as fulfilling the law, and therefore they were righteous enough, and Jesus calls them on it right here. and he makes it very clear to them again, pointing out to them how wrong they are, just as they have been wrong in their religious beliefs all along. So let me just end with this. God is gracious. God forgives all of our sins through Jesus Christ. We know that through the blood of Christ. If we have been through a divorce, if you've been through a divorce, God forgives. And God strengthens, and God takes us past it, just like he does all sin. And God would not have you heap a bunch of guilt on yourself and be hindered by that in the future. He would have you move on and do what's right as best you can from this point forward, just as we need to move on from all of our past sins. And so that's the truth of the matter. However, that should never be looked at as a license to just bail out of a marriage either, okay? Marriage should be considered sacred and should be, from this point forward, considered something that we would not take lightly and we would commit ourselves to. If you'll remember in the last week's text, he said, if your eye offends you, then pluck it out, or if your hand offends you, then cut it off. And by offend, he means causes you to sin. What's he was using that dramatic, he was using those dramatic terms to simply say this: do whatever you can to keep from sinning, is what he was saying. Obviously, he wouldn't have us cut our hand off or pluck our eye out. He's using those absurdities to drive home the seriousness of sin and say, do whatever it takes to work it out and not fall into sin. And so that would stand to reason in these verses that we've just looked at. Do whatever it takes to make the marriage work. Do whatever it takes to remain committed. And that goes for even in our counsel to others. People come to us, we're having trouble, what should we do? Always, always try to urge the people to work it out if they can. There are situations that not able to be worked out, okay? And I don't even want to go into opening a whole nother can of worms, but we're dealing with dynamics here. We talked momentarily about it last week, but pornography and addictions to pornography, is that unfaithfulness? Is that adultery? Maybe it is, and is somebody that can't overcome that addiction. So there's a lot of complex issues here. The main thing we need to walk away from this text with is that, hey, God would have families to stay together as best they can, and we would do well to work at it, okay, and be committed to our marriages, okay? Thank you. And what's next week, man? It's got to be easier. Something. Let's talk about something fun. Okay, let's stand. All right. David.